peace and love, peace and love.
Welcome to this neighborhood, neighbor.
My mom always said, life was like a box of chocolates. You never know what you're gonna get.
You know what I am? I'm a housewife that figured it out.
Wow, 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 wow!
And now, welcome to Good Things Radio with your hosts, Brooke Taylor and Jennifer Willits.
Hello again and welcome to episode 22 of Good Things Radio. My name is Brooke Taylor, broadcasting from Ohio, where we're just starting to see the first hint of those leaves changing color here.
I was suspicious that you were experiencing nice, colorful changes in those trees. And I'm Jennifer Willits, broadcasting from the bright and sunny Colorado. And the leaves are still quite green in our neighborhood.
Oh, boy. Well, I'm not quite ready for it. It's happening, but I still feel like I'm ready for summer to hang on. But, you know, it's pretty. So it's nice to see that. And I think it's just representative, too, of the mover and shaker time of year. This is the entering into autumn and you've got the school back in session and a lot going on. So how are you? What's new at the Willits Ranch, Jennifer?
Oh, man. I'm feeling, one, very excited. And I'll tell you why in just a moment. And two,
that's good.
I'm feeling also like a renewal in my faith. Like just since last week, I started really feeling like I needed to respond to God and try to dig deeper in my own faith life and not to settle for complacency, which is something I think many of us probably struggle with, but I'm, you know, no exception to that rule. I have always struggled with getting comfortable spiritually and just sort of assuming this is how my life will be for the rest of my life and it's not going to be much different. So I'm just going to keep on going in maintenance mode. So I've really wanted to shake things up for myself and for my children this week. But all in all, I feel really good. I had some, you know, some kind of little frustrations with going to the dentist, which is something that I'm continuously surprised with how often I find myself actually going to the dentist office. And I mean, I don't know what it's like for you, Brooke, but in our household, we actually go to the dentist, I think, more than to the pediatrician, which makes no sense to me. But, you know, we both have 5 kids that we are responsible for raising and seeing into adulthood as best we can. And that includes things like making sure, you know, that we stay up on all their dental visits, because thankfully, and I don't want to sound like, you know, doesn't everybody go to the dentist? I realize that there are probably some families who don't go or don't have dental insurance, so they can't even afford to go. But for now, we have dental coverage, so we have access to a dentist, and it's good. You know, it's something that we can do. So while I have access to it, I would like to try to help our kids, you know, have all their dental records up to date and all that good stuff. But I don't know. And I'm
plus
gonna ask
it's
you,
the orthodontia as well. I know with some of your kids, my oldest has braces more. I mean, that's really almost a college education. And then they do go to college. So it does add up. I know.
And, you know, I wonder if you are suspicious of the same things I am, because like the thing with the teeth, from baby teeth not wanting to leave your child's mouth, and so suddenly you feel like you're forced into having extractions done because they won't leave your child's head no matter what. They don't fall out. And so now you got to like pay money to have them pull the tooth out because it's now a trickier thing. You can't just tie a string around it and yank it yourself, you know? And
yes, then, the good old days.
You know, I mean, like my dad and mom never ever had to worry about taking my brother or myself to a dentist to have a tooth pulled because they all fell out the natural way. I mean, do your kids' teeth fall out normally, or do you have to also take them to the dentist to have an extraction done?
Well, I could probably write a book on the tooth saga of each child, but I think mostly they've come out on their own, except my my 9-year-old now, he had a few that had to be pulled. So it's just different for everybody. But I agree. I don't myself remember ever going to get them pulled. And even for my oldest, Gabriel, who's 14 now, that wasn't a thing either. I don't know. There are trends that happen in the medical community and whether it's dentistry or whatever. And I wonder if that's one of them. And even braces seem to be going on earlier. And there's different philosophies about that too. So
yes.
And it's all a scheme. It's a controversy. It's a conspiracy.
It feels like there is a big, big business here. And I don't know if dentists and orthos are all kind of working together, because usually you have a referral from one to the other. It's like, oh, yeah, your kid needs braces. Oh, yeah, look at this mess. I mean, yeah, they can't function. You know, they're not going to make it. You're not going to be able to chew steak when they're an adult. You know, heaven forbid they can't chew steak when they're an adult, you know. And it just kind of makes you wonder, are they not over-recommending and over-referring these things to children? And then parents feel like if they don't do it, they're not being a good parent. If they don't get the braces for their kid, they are doing a disservice to the child. But it just kind of makes you wonder, what if the parent didn't? Or what if they just can't afford? And then that certainly is the case for many parents, where they just don't have the funds or they don't have the insurance. And so they just sort of leave their kid the way that they are. And I thought,
well, I think, you know, therein lies the life of a parent or a mom, I think, particularly because more often than not, we're the ones that are kind of in charge of that sort of schedule. And I think it's the same with immunizations. You've got the philosophy of, I'm not going to do these vaccines, to I need to, and you feel kind of guilty either way. There's a gluten-free diet, and should we do that? But I can't afford it. And, you know, there's the dentistry, all of it, where you obviously want the best interest, and we have all these choices. And I think that can be complicating for, you know, someone that just is trying to figure it out and not go broke in the process. But then, you know, that when you don't do it, something's going to happen and then you'll feel bad. So as much as the dental hygiene is interesting, I want to hear about your holiness, too, because that to me is really piquing my interest when you talk about your renewal, that even that word sticks out to me, because I just talked to my mom a few days ago, and I was lamenting the homeschool situation we have right now, and in complaining a little bit. She said, you need to go to confession. And I was like, okay, well, but she was right. And I realized that my own prayer life is definitely, I guess, in a bit of a drought. But I would love to hear about yours, and just in this busyness and adjustment of schedule, how you're fitting it in and having that renewed time.
Well, interestingly enough, when, you know, you pointing out the word confession, that's kind of, I think, the beginning of everything, because, you know, I'm Catholic. I'm a Catholic mom. We got a Catholic family. And so we really are trying to grow in our Catholic faith in particular. And that includes the reception of the sacraments. And so we have seven sacraments in the Catholic Church. Just in case, you know, you are our, you know, beloved Protestant listener, I don't want to assume that you just know basic, you know, Catholic terms that are very, very familiar to both Brooke and myself. But one of them is the sacrament of reconciliation, which is also commonly referred to as confession. And it's a lot easier for me to schedule that opportunity for myself, because I'm a driver. I can kind of go where I need to go, find a time that works for my schedule, and just go and make it happen. But when you have a large family like we do, you realize that your children completely depend on you as the parent for them to receive that sacrament in particular. They just don't have the access because they're young and they don't drive and they just don't have a way to do it. They don't have a way to get there. And so it's very easy for me to sort of forget their spiritual need. And so we have a 15-year-old son, Walter, and he has brought it up to me a few times, like, Mom, I would like to go to confession. And, you know, one, I'm just, you know, ecstatic that my son feels close enough to me to approach me and tell me as his mom that he desires that. He desires to be reconciled with God. And I got to make that happen for him. I mean, that's my responsibility as his Catholic mom. I got to help him out because he has no way to get it done on his own. And so I forgot. And then like another week goes by, I says, Mom, what about confession? I'm like, oh, yes. Okay. Don't give up on me. Keep asking me, and I have got to remember to do this. So I actually called the church, and I don't know, every parish has their own like dedicated window of opportunity for offering confession to the parish. So usually it's like an hour or 2 hours on some morning, and anyone can go, but you have to go right during that window of opportunity. Well, the window of opportunity in our parish is like Saturday at 8 a.m. And for some reason, it is the hardest window for us to jump through. We can't ever make it. So I thought, I just need to call and schedule something else, something that will work for my schedule and that the priest is still willing to do. So we compared schedules. I called up the parish and he called me back and he said, all right, when can we do this? So we chose like 8 o'clock tomorrow night because that was the only time that would work with our kids' school schedule, you know, my work schedule, my husband's work schedule, you know, people working their fast food jobs. You know, it was the only available hour where I could pull it off. And so
good for you.
I decided that if I'm taking Walter, I might as well just take all the boys because they're all, you know, of age. They've all received that sacrament before. And it all, you know, it's been a while for all of us, and myself included. And so we're going to make that happen. I made an appointment on my calendar. And so once I write it down on my calendar, it will happen. And so, and that need or that observation that I made as a parent, noticing how the children in our home really depend on us for their education and for their consciences to be formed in the faith, really starts with the parents. And I realized that I'm not doing good at all in this area. I was far better years ago. And since we've moved here, it's been very, very difficult to maintain some kind of a normal religious education sort of schedule that makes sense for our family. And so we haven't really done much of anything in this last year for the younger kids. The older two, they have found a way for them to still grow in their faith and learn more about their faith. But now they've kind of reached kind of a plateau also. And I know that that reality happens to a lot of Catholic families in particular, where they've got kids who have already received confirmation. Those kids in particular, they run the risk of falling into a little bit of a spiritual learning kind of hole where there's kind of nothing for them, but they know they need to go, but they don't really feel like they belong anywhere. And so it does kind of become a point of drifting away for many, many teenagers. And it's just, there's a lot of working parts there as to why that reality is there, but it's true. And so to act like it's not there is just false because it's there and it will affect everyone. So we decided to go ahead.
Well, as you mentioned that leading by example, it reminded me of this summer at the Faith and Family Festival, just a really wonderful event in our area here in Canton. And it was a great opportunity to hear Marcellino D'Ambrosio. He's Dr. Italy, and was blessed to MC that. But he was talking about that exact thing and how particularly a challenge for dads, because moms are always the ones that speak to the heart and that are more of the nurturer. So yeah, they're naturally maybe going to be more geared toward faith, but dads are the ones that really focus on the relevant and the important. And so if children see that dad doesn't put faith in his life as a priority, or it's not relevant or important, then that's really going to, I mean, we've all heard the cats in the cradle thing. And you know that song or that message where working, providing money, these things are important, and they are, not to take anything away. But that really is the practical aspect of a man. And it really spoke to my husband because my husband's very pragmatic. He's a military-minded, structured guy, and he just thinks about the basic things of each day. And that is, I need to pay the bills. Especially now he's the wage earner of the family, the breadwinner. And so his faith was kind of compartmentalized maybe when he was driving to work, or he'd say, you handle that. And, you know, I'm handling everything else. But it wasn't until we heard that message that it was like, okay, that reminder, that light bulb on again, that spotlight on the parents. And I think if you are a single mom or there isn't that much of a inspiration for the dad, it's still, like you said, that model of the parents, because they, and we've talked about this before, they hear some of what we say, but they see everything that we do. So for you to set that up, the confession, and then be living that out, I think that's that big reminder, the pressure, but it's true, the privilege, I guess, really.
Yeah. And it is a tremendous responsibility. And I understand completely how that ball can be dropped in any family. And even the ones with the best intentions, it's just very easy for it to slip through the cracks. And I have felt personally very spiritually restless just these last couple of months. Like, I have felt a type of an anxiousness, not necessarily anxiety, but an anxiousness that I something is out of sync, something's out of whack, I need to fix it. And it has to do with the kids, but I'm not really sure what to do or what it's going to look like. But all I know is that I don't like this situation right now. I don't like what I see with the, you know, the constant screens in our house being used, whether it be a TV screen, a computer screen, an iPad screen, iPhone screen. It's always a screen that has the attention and the hearts and minds of our family members. And in many ways, we're all guilty of it. And we're all looking at these screens and we're all in the same house, but we're all separated in our own home because of those screens. And while I'm not saying that all screens are evil and they're bad, I'm not going to say that at all, because I know that they serve a purpose. And in many ways, you can learn about your faith through those screens too. But we have to be very careful. If we let it go unchecked, it will continue to drive a rift and we will all slip away, I think, from really nurturing an active faith life with God. And kids will be the first to go. And I thought, I don't want to settle for this. While I have them in my care, I need to do everything I can as their mom to watch for this and to help them see their purpose in life and to help them see that how loved they are by God and how important nurturing and building that relationship is. So because, you know, I had to deal with the whole confession thing. So yes, I feel relieved that I at least am making some headway on that and will be good for a few months, hopefully, after I get that confession done. Hopefully I won't let, you know, 3 months pass again, but I might, you know, I just, that's just my reality right now. I mean, in the Catholic Church, they only really concretely recommend that you go like twice a year, like, you know, Christmas and Easter, but really, the more you go, the better off you are spiritually, the more reconciled you are, and the more graces you will open up yourself to receive if you can receive that sacrament more regularly. Mm-hmm. But I didn't want to stop there. I knew that the confession was just one piece, but there had to be more. The religious education was another. And when you've got five kids, all different ages, all with different needs, all with different ideas and different sets of knowledge about what they already know about the faith, where does one even begin? And this is exactly what homeschooling moms deal with all the time, because many of homeschooling moms are taking on the challenge of homeschooling religious education to their kids. And that is a choice that they have. And I admire that, because I want to do something like that myself, because it's too logistically hard to receive religious education at my local parish because of the way that they have it, you know, sort of broken up with one, like Monday is one grade, Tuesday is another grade. And it's like, well, great. If you've got five kids, five different ages, you could be literally driving back and forth to your local parish five nights a week. And that is a lot harder to logistically pull off. Yeah. So I decided that I wanted to try to do more by just doing something about it. I wanted to be a doer of the word rather than someone who sits down and just hears the word and not act at all. And so I knew I had to just really take that seriously and try to bring Jesus to the children. I mean, they are not going to suck it up without you. You've got to present it to them and show them where God is everywhere in their life. And if I don't do that, they may not get it at all. And then it's my fault because I didn't do it. Because I didn't. Well, like, why didn't I do it? You know,
that can be another one of those aspects where it's such an exciting, abundant gift if you are of the Catholic tradition. But it also is challenged because we have such a rich faith and the width and breadth is so wide and deep. And so do you focus on things like the graces that come from the sacraments and theology of the body? And what does that mean? And some of the encyclicals and the history and the church fathers and the early Christian writings, or is it strictly Bible-based? You want to make sure, because I was realizing that as we were studying the Bible and we were really getting into the lives of the saints and how each one has a model for what our children can look to today to live out their life as a mortal human being. And how did these people live a holiness that every breath was for Christ, was for Mary, was for heaven? And then I thought, oh, I don't even know if they know the Ten Commandments, and just basic Bible knowledge that thankfully with our co-op now they're getting, you know, Genesis and memorizing those really basic important tenets, the books of the Bible. Do they even know the books of the Bible? You know, this is the area where exactly. The Protestants are so good. So I think that is a challenge. It's a good thing, but it's also like, okay, Lord, you need to show me, illuminate my mind and teach me what my kids need to know. Because, and then some kids, it's like, oh, but then the rosary, you know, there's so many things that there aren't enough hours in the day.
Well, and that's not a bad problem to have. I mean, if anything, that illustrates how you can have ongoing conversations about your faith to your children, that it doesn't need to be just 1 hour a week, which is what they would have gotten had I just sent them to traditional religious education at the local parish, just 1 hour a week. And then, you know, maybe they'll get more when they go to Mass on Sunday. But there's enough content that you can't get to it all. In fact, that's the point. You want to be a student for the rest of your life in matters of your faith. You never get there. You know, you're always learning. The Pope is still learning. He's not done. You know, we all are students forever until we die, you know. And so this week, I've just am trying to motivate myself and honor my own vocation as mother to do something about it. So I decided to choose Wednesday as the day of the week for me to have homeschool religious education for our three youngest kids, who have greater holes of knowledge in their faith than my older two teenagers, who are better formed in their faith because they've been through all the classes, they've been through confirmation, they've been, you know, beyond that, and they're still learning through conversations they have with Greg and myself. So that's, I've just really have felt this upswing of wanting to increase my love and my faith with our children and within our household this week than ever before. And it feels good. It feels right. It feels like this is exactly what I should be focusing on right now. Mm. Now, where will I be a month from now? Hopefully I'll still be entrenched in this and finding a new rhythm and a new groove for myself. But I'm just going to start with the catechism, I think, tomorrow. There's like the Baltimore Catechism was broken down into a little more digestible nuggets. I think it's great for kids. It's just kind of a classic, but a goodie. And then also slowly introduce them to the real catechism of the Catholic Church. And if you're not familiar with what that is, that's basically, it's a full compilation of all the belief systems of the Catholic Church. It is the source. It is the reference point. If you ever have a question about Catholicism, you want to know what they believe, it's in that book. That's where you go. Rather than trying to Google it online and you may not know if the source is legitimate or will give you an accurate Catholic perspective, go to the Catechism for the Catholic Church. In fact, it is online for free and you could search it online for free. So you don't even have that excuse anymore of not owning one. Well, if you have the internet, you've got access to it just the same. So we're going to try to do some new things this week.
That's exciting. And what's nice about that is it really is all one bundle because you've got the virtues, you've got scripture references, you do have encyclicals and writings, and there's a family consecration apostolic version as well for kids that I know you can get online. We've got, it's 1 and 2, and that's really nice too. It's real thick. It's a bit heady, but it's got illustrations in it, kind of like the Baltimore Catechism, that are really powerful for kids too. So that, I'm sending you a virtual high five. That's a huge, exciting victory. That's really great.
Well, I know you've also had some excitement in your own homeschool adventures back in your neck of the woods, because I saw that you did some traveling by looking at your Instagram photos, and I'm dying to hear, where did you go exactly, and what was the inspiration behind going where you went, and for what purpose? And so just tell me all about your trip.
Well, it's a tip and a trip because a friend of mine, and you know how you run into these moms who just are a walking human Pinterest board. I mean, they have all sorts of wisdom and ideas and resources, and oh, you got to go here. And if you're really, you know, blessed to stumble upon one of those, it's like the jackpot. So my friend Jamie has been homeschooling forever, and she said, you have to go here. It's Colonial Williamsburg. They have something called Homeschool Days. And sure enough, we looked this summer and I thought, okay, we're going to do it. And normally when you go to Colonial Williamsburg, I believe it's $40 a ticket for an adult. I'm not sure about the kids now, but for that adult price, it's pricey if you have a large family, but I think it's reasonable. But you know, if you're going for a couple days, that adds up. So for this particular event, the homeschool days, which is I think about a 2-week period in September annually, the tickets are $10. And
oh,
in addition,
wow.
Then on top of that, they've got these programs like Life of a Soldier, which is one that we did. And so you get to enlist and for the day go through the drills and know the terms and see what it's like to be a Revolutionary War soldier on the field. And it obviously is history by immersion. And you just can't beat that. Even someone who just is maybe a little young to understand the full scope of the historic times, you still get excited by the noises and the accents and the horses and everything. And for my boys, it was just a few of us, it was just me and then the boys that I homeschool. We have five kids, but my sixth grader and my fourth grader, we just did this road trip. It was about 8 hours and we went for a few days, and I highly recommend it because it was fantastic. There were no crowds, but it was still warm, so they could swim, and the weather was great. The prices were low, and we did, you could have this big giant mug, and you know, like those big 7-Eleven mugs, but they sell them there, and they were like $13. But wherever you go in Colonial Williamsburg that has these signs, they fill it up for free with whatever soda, lemonade, cider, whatever.
Cool.
So it was nice. And that was another tip from Jamie. So thank you. She's full of all these tips.
Well, what age would you recommend for children? Like any age, like even teenagers? Or is this something more like elementary school age?
Okay, for sure, teenagers. And because I think they're more able to grasp the history of it. And they have, you know, they have General Cornwallis, and they have, you know, all of the characters of that time period. And they come out and they do these skits, and you just can't help but be captivated. Oh, it is so well done. Everything is so well done. You can learn about the judicial system of that time. For me personally, as a Catholic, I thought it was very fascinating, because if we were to have lived in that time in Colonial Williamsburg in the 18th century, we would not have been able to vote. We would not have been able to hold public office. We would have been given one raggedy horse. And a lot of basic rights we enjoyed just were not in place yet. And you had to go to church at least once a month. And if you were not, you were taken to court and you could be publicly flogged. Or, I mean, it just,
wow.
It was so interesting. So the older kids, I think, would be like,
and
whoa,
this was,
you know.
Isn't our government? This is the earliest forms of our government would take you to court if you didn't go to church.
Yeah.
That is crazy.
How far
we have gone.
Right. And then that debate between Jefferson and Thomas Paine and, you know, all of these things that we've learned about, but you forget. I mean, there's no way you can remember, unless you're a historian, all of these little details. And it's so fascinating because, like you said, you're always learning. And so you never get tired of learning, especially in the context of this time machine that you're in. And my son went up, he was picked to go up, and they said, if you were a thief and you were caught stealing, and I think, gosh, now I don't even remember if it was your second offense, they brand you with a T on the palm of your hand. And
ouch.
That shows, no matter where you went, it shows this person, you know, they've stolen before. And so we had a great discussion. Well, maybe that would be a bad idea today, because there's so many people that, I mean, obviously it's not really upholding the dignity of the person, but it was still, it's just interesting. And the one thing I will say is, of course, you will have some of the trappings of the food was a bit expensive, and the kids want the souvenirs. So my son wanted,
yes,
really bad. He wanted this shirt that had, you know, the shirt of the era, where it's the, like the Johnny Tremaine shirt. It's the cotton and you roll up the sleeves and whatever. The shirt was $60 for this thing. It's a piece of cotton shirt. And it's an 18th century shirt at a 22nd century price. I told him.
Right.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah, really. So much for those 18th century prices.
Yeah,
like $1.50.
Like, but for the girls, you can pay $25 and you can rent costumes. So they will be in full period piece, you know. But again, if you have a large family, this all adds up. The hats are very expensive, you know, even the little long rifles are pretty pricey. And you have to watch too, because some of the things were made in China. And I thought, I'm gonna make, you know, pay for the things that were made here. And so you can do that, but you just kinda have to watch. So it was so fascinating, and I took notes along the way. And so just kind of a tip for anybody that might live on, you know, in the Midwest or this region, because it's total thumbs up. I mean, it's definitely, if you can spare that vacation time in the fall, worth it, because it was just one of a kind. So I definitely want to go back, but it was good.
Do you think your husband would have enjoyed it with his military background?
Oh, my. Yes, I told him. I said, we have to all come in, even if you have younger ones. You're being facetious.
Yeah.
But the younger ones, too, because, you know, kids love music and they love pageantry. And I mean, if they're too little, you know, they do the cannons. And so there's loud noises and things. But it really is one of those places where there can be something for everyone, even if you just want to have the kids stay back at the hotel and play in the kiddie pool. So I definitely recommend it. And it's fun, too, when you are homeschooling, you have an excuse to take these trips. But it really is, you know, an investment of, you know, a memory that, you know, you'll have. It's good.
And so I guess it was a huge thumbs up from your kids, and they got a lot of history for about how long were you there? Like 3 days, or were you there longer than that?
You know, we went for one day. We stopped because it wasn't out 8 hours, and you pass right by. We live in Ohio, so the detour we took was through to D.C. because we were going right there, and I thought we have to stop. But it's just embarrassing, I'll be honest, because I'm in a minivan. I'm in downtown D.C. at 5 o'clock, and I don't really know where I'm going anywhere. I'm not the best driver in a city situation. And I'm trying to parallel park this car that you have to now, these tolls, it's not putting the coins in. You actually like have to go online and download this app to pay 2 hours for a toll. So I'm trying to figure that out. So,
oh, man. I've never heard of that.
I know. I didn't either. I'm just like this shut-in homeschool mom.
So if you don't have a
smartphone,
if you don't have a smartphone, you can't park there, it sounds like.
Yes. And then, you know, my battery was dying and my, you know, I just felt helpless because my husband does so much for me. And he goes, why didn't you plug it in? I said, I did have it plugged in, but the wire is kind of messed up. So if it's not like situated a certain way, it doesn't charge. And so, of course, it was one of those situations where I'm thinking it's a good thing, though, I think, to go out of your comfort zone every now and then, because you have to, you know, push yourself to do things. So
sure.
Thankfully, it was good. And then we just went for 2 days to Colonial Williamsburg and then came home. But it's, you know, it was unforgettable. And it really gave me a renewed appreciation for freedom, for liberty. We happened to just by Providence really be there for Constitution Day, the 220th anniversary of the signing of the Constitution. And it brought tears to my eyes because you just forget, you know, the oceans of blood that was shed for the things that we enjoy today. And in the process of driving 8 hours, I had also from the library gotten a lecture on turning points in American history. So my kids, I think, were about to jump out the window, but I was super excited.
But you had a great time.
Yeah. They were like trapped in this car listening to all these turning points.
I want to watch a movie.
Yes. No, we're going to listen to smallpox. We're hearing about smallpox. That's what we're doing.
Oh, man. Speaking of smallpox and colonial America, did you ever watch this HBO miniseries? It starred Paul Giamatti. I think it was just called John Adams. It was like a mini series about him. And I think Tom Hanks was one of the producers. Oh, this came out like maybe 7 years ago. Had you seen that?
Yes.
Have you ever seen that?
Yeah. With Laura Linney, and my husband has the books. We have the mini series. We've watched it over the years, but it is a bit of a commitment, but it's so worth it. It's so good.
Because I remember they touched on how the smallpox affected that community. And they really went into graphic detail showing just what kind of an affliction that was on the people. And that's something that we are so blessed not to have to really worry about, some of those terrible diseases that affected, you know, these early Americans. And anyway, so I do, as I get older, I have a greater appreciation for history. And now we're living in a time of history. History is being made even today, with Pope Francis arriving to the United States of America for the first time in his life, September 22nd, 2015. That's the date that we're actually recording this episode. And I have to tell you, it was thrilling to watch when that Alitalia plane pulled up in the tarmac at Andrews Air Force Base just outside of DC today, and like right at 4 p.m. sharp, just when it was, you know, laid out on the itinerary, that's when the plane pulled up. And just watching all those who were greeting him on the tarmac, and also the great discussions about, well, what's protocol? I mean, will there be any formal remarks? Will anybody say anything, or will they just have an informal meeting on the tarmac? Because this was the first time, you know, Pope Francis was going to meet President Obama and his family. But it was really cool watching that live coverage today. And I'm just glad that I had the wherewithal to turn on the TV, because when I'm home by myself and the kids are in school, I never turn on the TV. I don't even think about the television. And I didn't want to miss this. I didn't want to miss any coverage of the papal visit. So I'm scrambling trying to find who is broadcasting anything right now that I could see what's happening and how can I see what's happening. So we have access to EWTN, so I turned on EWTN, and they were running live coverage. And that was one of the few channels I had access to that I could see. And so that was just, I don't know, I was strangely emotional about it, because you have all this buildup, you know he's coming, and you can see the plane, and you just got to wait for the plane to stop taxiing and pull up in front of the stairs, and then they rolled out the red carpet, and any minute now, that door's going to open, and then there's my friend! you get swept up. You can hear the screams and the cheers of all the media and the people, and everyone's clapping, and you get swept up in that excitement, because Pope Francis is very, very popular in this country, and there was just a lot of excitement to welcome him to our land. And I'm just excited for this week. I mean, you're talking about all the history that going through colonial America and the Constitution Day that you just happened to be there on, that timing was great. And Philadelphia is where Pope is ultimately going to end his American visit, in Philadelphia, which is the birthplace of the Constitution and the city of brotherly love. And I just think how appropriate, how fitting that is the city where this world, you know, world meeting of families is taking place. And millions of people are flocked over to the East Coast, you know, this week. And, you know, I'm just very excited about it. I'm just eager to watch more coverage tomorrow. Of course, tomorrow being September 23rd, this is when the real big meeting, the welcoming ceremony will be happening with President Obama and, of course, Pope Francis. But it doesn't come without some raising of the eyebrows. And I don't know if you've been following the news about who all will be in attendance at this welcoming ceremony that has not pleased the Vatican at all because of how openly sexually immoral those people have embraced into their lives. And they are also linked in powerful positions, and they're all going to be there, like transgender, openly gay, this. And, you know, it's like, oh, wow, this is going to be a very interesting way to welcome the Pope in particular, who is coming really as a pastor to our country, as a shepherd for all souls. You know, he cares about everyone's soul, not just Catholic souls, everyone's souls, you know? And so I just hope that hearts will be changed this week, and that people's ears will be open to hear his message. And I pray for Pope Francis that he rises up and says the hard truth that he's always proclaimed. And I'm just really excited about, you know, what could potentially be happening this week in our country.
Well, boy, I just, as you were talking, had a flood of so many extreme different emotions. Because when you set up the visual of that landing and the joy and how much our country needs to be unified, and especially when the culture embraces faith, it's a rare thing. And when, as you and I share the same faith of the Catholic tradition, it is a thing of pride. You're grateful that whether it's the NBC Nightly News or it's People Magazine, they are joyfully proclaiming that the Holy Father is here. And it's so nice. It's like balm for the soul to see our country once again have like a little glimpse of how things used to be. And so that is such a good thing. But I almost have gotten to the point where I get so worked up because I am home now, or I don't know if it's just my personality. Sometimes I just can't even look at the news because I get so upset and my soul grieves. Because when you mentioned those, you know, the guest list that I feel that the Vatican handled very charitably. I mean, these are people that are aggressively, radically against the church. And of course, we know we love all people. But again, Jesus said, repent and sin no more. Yes, your sins are forgiven. Jesus loves, embraces, and he is love. God is love. But there's also a call to repentance. And when you have people that have said, I will not repent, and what I believe is sin is a virtue, I mean, that's a heresy. That's, I mean, on a good day, I mean, I'm just being honest, that's a heresy. And when you invite, you know, a entire guest list of people, I mean, it's just, to me, so disrespectful and so hurtful and so wrong. And I'm trying not to focus on that. But I just, I'm having a hard time about it. Like my mom said, I need to go to confession because, you know, there is an anger, and I can justify it and say it's a righteous indignation. If you look up the name Dan Savage, and especially link it to LifeSite News and some of the stories of what they've exposed, and you see the things that he has said about the church, the absolutely X-rated, horrific statements that he has made about the Catholic faith, and to know that he has been received by the red carpet being rolled out to the White House to come and meet the Pope, I just can't fathom it. When you have people who have lost, you know, there was Mr. Foley, the gentleman journalist that was martyred, really, he was a journalist that was killed by ISIS early on, and his family, such a faithful Catholic family, that the Pope actually spoke out, you know, and said, we're with you, we're praying for you, and people like that are shunned or not invited. I really am having a hard time, you know, showing restraint and even to my children, you know, because they had Mr. Donahue on from the Catholic League on Fox News, and he was talking about this particular topic, and I had to change a channel because I was getting so, my blood pressure was going up. So as Christians,
oh dear.
I mean, it's a hard thing because I feel this kind of Joan of Arc, you know, I mean, what am I going to do? I can pray and I can complain, you know, but I'm not going to do anything, I suppose, except we can petition. But it's just so much around us. It's surrounding us. You know, this, I feel, attack or war on the family, a spiritual battle that we're in. And I don't mean to digress, because the irony is that he is here for the world meeting of families. And that is the spotlight. That is the most important thing. And the theme is love is our mission, the family fully alive. And so that's what I'm trying to focus on. Just at the foot of the cross, Jesus, help me focus on how I can be a conduit of love in my own family and a messenger of love. And, you know, how we can, through the society that we live in, put missionaries from our children into the society and be beacons of light that point to Jesus. I mean, I guess that's what we're called to do, and just let the rest fall away.
You know, earlier today, I was watching some of the live coverage of the World Meeting of Families, because they're already in the Pennsylvania Convention Center, and they're already having masses, and the opening was today. So I saw some of the opening remarks, some of the guest speakers, and pretty much, like, you know, there are, I think Catholic TV is going to running constant coverage, EWTN is running constant coverage. And so pretty much if you just turn on those channels this week, you will see something, you know, from the events of what's happening for the World Meeting of Families. But I just happened to watch a little bit of EWTN had a little table set up right there in the middle of the floor. And even behind their shoulders, you could see just crowds of people walking as they're looking at vendor exhibits. And, you know, everyone has their lanyard around their neck. And it's a typical conference atmosphere. And Doug Keck, who is the current president and COO of EWTN, along with Jeanette Bankovich, were kind of manning the television angle of EWTN, and they were interviewing guests all day long. And it was just interesting hearing their insights of how this is very much, you know, centered around the family. And this is a time to celebrate family and really dive into strengthening and fortifying what it means to have a family traditionally and what God intended it to be. And so I think about what's happening in Philadelphia this week, the way I have personally felt for the last couple months of unrest and the need to focus on the family, particularly the spirituality of our family, because we need to be fortified for where we're going in the future, which is completely uncertain. And when you look at the breakdown of society, the breakdown of traditional marriage, even in our own country, we know that we're headed someplace very, very contentious, where we will be probably fighting a type of cultural war where belief systems will be challenged, and we could be facing greater persecution because of our belief in traditional marriage. I heard a little bit of a program this week from a good friend of ours, Patrick Madrid, who is a Catholic speaker and author, and he has a radio show that he does too. And he read an article that there is a new term in the government that is being introduced called sexual rights, that this is something that is going to take a greater precedence in this American culture, that sexuality will be you will be having their own set of rights, that now if you break those rights, now you're breaking the law, and now you can have new sets of punishment. And there's another movement of regarding homosexuality, but for those who fear homosexuality or are afraid of it or are against it, they're largely labeled as a homophobe. And now there is a push from certain people who are pro-homosexual that they want to have homophobia clinically listed as mental illness. So they're trying to flip the tables completely around, where years ago, homosexuality was once, I believe, labeled as a disorder of sorts. Mm-hmm. Now they're trying to say to have feelings against it is the disorder now. And I thought, what? Where? What are we? Okay. This is a whole new landscape that, you know, I'm just glad our Holy Father is here. I'm really, really hoping for great, wonderful fruits to come from this papal visit to our country. There's no shortage of things to pray about. Mm-hmm. And my biggest takeaway, my biggest piece of advice is stay close to God and pray and pray and do what you can to really fortify the spirituality within your household. Know who you are. If you say you're a Christian, be a Christian, walk the walk, and don't be afraid of what goes on around you, because if God is on your side, that's the most important thing, because the new battle, I think, will start shifting to the battle for your soul. And it's always, I mean, that's something we've always known. You know, if you've been a Christian your whole life, you kind of know that your soul is the most important part of you. But we're so used to our creature comforts. We're so used to having a lifestyle that we want to uphold, right, and being comfortable on this earth and in our homes, that we tend to put more stock and importance in our physical, in the temporal, in our bodies. And we tend to neglect the starvation of our soul. And so now we got to stop that. We just totally have to stop. We need to refocus our priorities to what do we have to do to get our souls right. And because ultimately that's what matters most.
You know, the official website for the World Meeting of Families has a lot of great resources to that exact point. It's worldmeeting2015.org, but they have prayers, they have meditations for families. There's even a spirituality center where you can join in solidarity with Holy Father. And there was something I printed out. I did just a little mantle area for our family that was a family theme, and it had some of the prayers that Holy Father was going to be talking about, or the theme letter that was released about this particular event, this Congress. And one of them is a message. It says, "Our Lord Jesus Christ made 12 promises to those who honor his Sacred Heart." And that's what families are being asked to do through this event. One of them is, "I will establish peace in their families. I will bless every place where an image of my heart shall be exposed and honored. And I will give to priests the gift of touching the most hardened of hearts." And that message, as well as a really beautiful message about the theme, which again is Love is Our Mission, the Family Fully Alive, is on the website. And it says, "Love is the glue for both family and society. This is why love is the fundamental mission of the family. It is why the family must be a sanctuary of love." And we know, I mean, it's hard sometimes. It feels more like a battlefield than, you know, a honeymoon with families and teenagers and different ages. But that's what I love. I love the call. "We most easily understood love when we ourselves are the fruit of our parents' tenderness. We must easily believe in fidelity when we see it molded by our father and mother." So it sounds like you're listening to the Holy Spirit in what you're doing and going back to that that fountain of you know, living water with your family. So it sounds like you're on the right track there.
Well, you know, I think we all need to be just doing the best we can and not be afraid to take those baby steps to help our families out, to really foster a home of love. And I love how you said that, how love is important in this whole festival of meeting of the families, and how we need to really, you know, foster a home of love. And it made me think of that really popular hashtag that was, you know, trending everywhere after the Supreme Court ruling this past June, that hashtag love wins. So you think about how the world society has appropriated love to mean something completely different. But really, the love that we're talking about is God's love, which is pure, which is perfect. It's God's love that wins. I think we need to start a new trend, a new hashtag. God's love wins.
Yes. Oh, the authentic, that no counterfeit. This is the real thing.
Yes.
Amen.
Well, gosh, it's been a fantastic time catching up with you, Brooke, and I'm looking forward to, you know, trading more text messages with you until we record our next episode in the month of October. But hey, if you like what you hear, if you enjoy listening to our bantering back and forth about whatever is on our hearts, please do us a favor and leave us a positive review over on iTunes. It's super easy to do. You just go to iTunes, go to the podcast directory, search up Good Things Radio, and there's a little button or a little link that says leave a review. And that really helps our show out tremendously. So please do us a favor and do that for us.
Your emails and even Facebook comments are really important too. You know, we have had our feedback down a little bit lately, but I think it's because it's our fault. We had some time there where our episode frequency slowed a bit. Obviously, Jennifer, you had a life-altering event. You were gone. We moved, of course, this summer. But at any rate, we miss you. We miss hearing from you. So if you want to share a piece of tidbit or recipe, anything, let's connect. It's always really nice just to exchange ideas, prayer requests, support, whatever it is, and just know that we're here together. So if you're listening, let us know. Drop us an email. It's just feedback at goodthingsradio.com. And we both get the emails. And I am really proud of myself because there are times where I am a complete failure in answering. But lately I've been doing really good. And you're always really good, Jennifer. So...
Oh, no, I'm not. I try, but you know.
We'll try
it. It's been real easy lately because no one has sent us emails, so it's worked out great.
So please do. It's feedback at goodthingsradio.com. Tell a friend to join the conversation because it means a lot to, I think, share this journey together.
Well, thank you so much for giving us your time today and for listening to yet another episode, episode 22 of Good Things Radio. God bless everybody.
And remember, as we celebrate St. Padre Pio's feast day, pray, trust, and don't worry.